Hello, 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 and hello, and welcome back to You Enjoy Life, and also hello, Apple. I'm staring at an apple right now, and, you know, I have a love-hate relationship, and hate's a strong word, but a love-hate relationship with apples in the winter, because, you know, I still crave them, but they're nowhere near as delicious as they are in the fall, when they are beautiful and magical and picked right off the tree. And actually, this morning, now that it's starting to get warm in Colorado, I'm going out every morning, or most mornings, and doing yard work, and part of that was fertilizing my trees. If you're someone that's interested in learning how to grow and don't really know where to start, YouTube obviously is a good space, but I'm reading this amazing book called Gaia's Garden, and what's fascinating about it is it's all about permaculture and how to basically build like this sustainable food forest. And the idea behind it is that, you know, most lawns are manufactured. Most lawns are grass and maybe a couple trees and mulch and everything looks pretty and perfect. Problem is that it doesn't really do much. It's a lot of upkeep. It wastes a lot of energy, and grass lawns, other than the actual appearance, serve no real purpose. So I've been learning how to really turn my yard into a full-on food forest so that I can just, it can be thriving. And ultimately, it takes a lot of work now, but the ultimate goal is that over time, there won't be much work and everything is sort of like feeding everything else. And it's a ton of research. It's a lot of learning and talking, but I'm really passionate and I'm making sure I take things, you know, one at a time. And that is a very key thing here. If I haven't mentioned this before, I'm part of a few different men's groups and they both meet in Denver and I kind of helped start both of them to some degree. And it was just a way to bring men together and kind of bring in conversations that are often hard to talk about, hard to look at. And one of the big things I find is that a lot of us grow up and we're surrounded by, you know, sexuality and ads and demeaning race and demeaning women and, you know, the sort of locker room talk and all those things. And I don't think it's, there's any one person to blame, but I know from who I am and from what I want to create that I can grow and I can change and I can create new types of connections. So a big heart of the men's group is to create a safe space where people can talk, where men can gather and talk about big, important things in their lives, from ranging from all different types of topics and kind of get clarity and get insight and hear different people's perspectives. Because sometimes it's nice to actually not just think about this is how I see it and that's it. It's like to learn about other things, to kind of be opened up, to be challenged, to new ways, and also see what other people are dealing with. So every time we do the men's group, someone different leads the men's group. And one thing that I love about that is you never know what the topic's going to be. You never know what people are going to talk about and they're going to bring to the table. And last night ended up being about Me Too. And the Me Too movement has been going on for a while now. I feel like it started around maybe October or so last year, and it just kind of took off. And I don't think the Me Too is the only movement that is important by any means. I think that is something that's just kind of shedding light on a lot of bad behavior in the world. And one thing that I really saw, and not even in my men's group, but just in general when I talk to people, is there's a lot of fear. Being like a white male right now, or just any male, but being like a white male right now, there's a lot of this fear around, hey, if I do the wrong thing, if I say the wrong thing, if I act the wrong way, or if I did something in the past, it's going to ruin me. And there's a lot of fear brewing and it freaks people out because they don't know what to do. I do believe that in most people's hearts, they want to get better. They want to become better than they are, but maybe out of fear, out of conditioning, out of judgment, they do things that aren't necessarily savory, that aren't necessarily suitable to living a good, like aligned, you know, positive life. So a lot of this fear build up creates oftentimes a lot of tension. People were talking about how like, oh, I don't even know how to flirt. You know, I'm worried if I flirt at work that I might get fired. So I kind of just completely shut it down. Or, you know, some women really like to flirt. Some women really want a guy who's like confident and forward and touchy and all these things. What if I do it to the wrong person? And then I end up on like CNN the next day and then I'm screwed and, you know, all these things. And I saw like all of the stirringness and all of the confusion and all of the issues that were going on. And here's the thing. I think it's kind of odd to be a man talking about Me Too. I'm not trying to represent and act like I know everything that's going on, but I will tell you this. I do know that it's important as men that we speak about this as well and that we bring it up because I think that everyone deserves to be treated equally. To me, the number one like sort of basic human, I feel like understanding is that we all are equal. We're all human. We're all in this together. No one's better than anybody else. Just because someone has more money or more power or is smarter and all these things, that doesn't mean that they're better, that they deserve more. There's a lot of people out there that are doing very bad things. There's a lot of people out there that are doing good things. And it doesn't necessarily feel balanced when we walk out in the world, because it's not balanced. You know, there's a lot of people that have privilege, myself included, that don't even really fully understand what that really means in this world. And it can be very confusing. And I also sense from a lot of people that there is this confusion around, like, well, I'm privileged, so I don't, you know, I don't even know. When I try to talk about this stuff, people are like, you can't even fathom what it's really like being a woman, you know, or being someone of color, because, you know, the way you're treated is completely differently. Just the baseline is different, you know. And I do have, like, you know, as someone who grew up Jewish, I grew up with a lot of opportunities, but I also grew up with a lot of hate towards my race. And I felt that. And it was a big struggle for me for many years, feeling like, you know, I'm the Jewish kid who, you know, because I'm Jewish, I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that, by default, or people are going to make fun of me, or they're going to put me down and all these things. And I found ways to harness that and actually use it towards my good doing, because I can be someone who feels separate, and I can be upset and angry about that, or I can be someone who's separate and you know, is just oblivious, or I can look at who I am and say, okay, what good can I do based on who I am? Because I believe that everyone has the opportunity to give something. I only know my story. You can hear someone else's story, and you can, you know, make that mean what you want, or you can learn from that, but this is only my experience of it, and I think everyone has a different experience, and all I know is that but the more I talk about it and the more that I share, the more that I can create this general, or at least hopefully create this general sense of connection amongst people in the world. That's what I'm here on this podcast to do, is to kind of open up your mind to differences. And not from the perspective of like, what does this guy know? Who does he think he is? He's this, that, and the other thing. It's like, no, but from what I've seen and from what I know in my heart, I want to share that with y'all. So when I shared last night, and I'm not going to go into detail about what everybody said by any means, that's their own experience, and of course everything is anonymous, but what I really kind of came up with was, I did grow up with locker room talk. A lot of people brought that up. It's like, there's this locker room talk, there's rap songs, there's music that just kind of accentuates, you know, like men dominating women and the conquest of that and all these things. And, you know, what I saw was, I grew up with that. I played football, I played sports, I was in locker rooms, I was around kids that were talking about bad things. I you know, bad things, and you know, people were being, you know, whether racism or sexism or whatever it was. And in some cases, I even participated in sharing in jokes and being funny and all these things, because that was the way to fit in. You know, if you wanted to be cool, if you wanted to be liked, you know, you kind of speak that language and you make fun of people and, you know, you put people down and all these things. And I did it because there's a people pleaser in me that wanted to be liked and wanted to be loved. But even as a kid, even as like a 15-year-old kid, I knew it wasn't right. I knew something deep inside, when I'd walk away, it just wouldn't feel good. It didn't make me comfortable. It didn't seem right. It didn't seem cool. But I would occasionally do it anyway. And I could rationalize, well, I'm not as bad, or I'm just like here. You know, I'm not really like, you know, I don't really think those things or believe those things. I'm just like, you know, telling jokes. And that's a big thing in our society. People make jokes. People like to make fun of people. You listen to comedians, they make fun of other people. They make fun of other races. They make fun of their parents. It's like they're doing it to get a laugh. And what happens is, it's all fun and games, you know, until they say it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt. But the truth is, when I really looked at my intention and I thought about it, what I saw was this sort of insecure kid in me that wanted to be liked and wanted to be loved and wanted to be accepted into what I considered to be like the cool group. Now, had I been able to have an opportunity to go back to high school right now, I would have not engaged in any of that, because I know it is, you know, it's just coming from a selfish place, coming from an insecure place, coming from a place of feeling a lack of something. And I can't do anything to actually change that in the moment. I can't actually go back to the past, but what I can do is I can see myself and see why it isn't right and how I can grow that. The other side for me, though, is that even though I was surrounded by men a lot and I had that experience of being around men and being around, not even men, I should call it boys, you know, in the locker room and being in these situations where there's locker room talk and things, I also had a lot of female friends. I also really related to the female. And in a lot of ways felt like I got along much better with females. I used to have long conversations with all my girlfriends, and not just girls I was dating, but girls that were friends we would talk all night, and I don't even remember what we were talking about, but I really related to the female. I felt very comfortable around the female. I always felt in some ways like I was really in tune with my feminine side. And I could say much more than most men, but I think the reality is I was just more comfortable with it, because a lot of men that I'm now going back, I look at them now and like they're maybe things are opening up for them, or they're realizing they're more feminine. But at the time they were hiding it because they wanted to be macho, you know, and I never really felt macho. But I just felt like I was someone that could be a chameleon and fit in anywhere. So having a lot more female friends, it was always an interesting perspective because I got to kind of see both sides. And I also saw the sides where females were, you know, in some ways doing similar things to the males in their own kind of fashion, you know, sexually talking about them in maybe derogatory ways. And not all females, but I would see that side too. I don't think it was just the men, but I think that men in the power and the patriarchy, that was more of the general concept of what was going on. That was more of the general vibe. So it was more of like this manly thing, you know, to conquer women and to sexually, like, you know, who could I sleep with and all that stuff. And I just never liked that. I also was not a touchy-feely person. I think a big thing that people bring up in the Me Too movement is like, well, you know, some women like flirting. Some women like it when you grab their arm, not grab their arm, but, you know, when you touch their arm or you touch their leg or you kind of like, you know, give them a hug or whatever, and other women don't, and that makes them uncomfortable. And people don't really know what to do. And in my perspective, it's always been very different because, and I'm not saying this perspective or this way is right. This is just how I've been. I've always was a shy kid growing up. So I found that when I knew somebody wanted to kiss me, for example, let's say I was really into a girl and I found out she really liked me too and wanted to kiss me. Well, then I felt comfortable. Then I felt like, okay, open windows. If you open the window, I will jump through the window. However, if that window is not open or I'm not sure, I will not make a move. And I was so shy looking back, especially when I was a kid, I was so shy that I would sit, you know, with a girl on a couch for hours without like barely even touching her finger because I didn't want to risk rejection. That's what it was for me. I was so fearful of rejection or upsetting this person by doing something they might not like that I ended up attracting women that tended to be more forthcoming, more aggressive, more more confident, you know, sexually and all these things. And I would kind of go along with it. And I would enjoy it. I think most people enjoy sex, you know, and they enjoy physical touch. But I saw a lot of friends of mine, men that were more like dominant and confident. And some women like that. In some cases, I think the men were too aggressive. But I think in general, what I saw was that if you're less aggressive, you're someone who's not as, you know, openly, physically forward and confident, you know, you, in order to connect with someone, typically you're going to connect with someone who is a little bit more sexually sure, I should say. And I think there's a lot of stigmas around women, and it's like this idea of, you know, if a woman are too sexually promiscuous, it's like they get called a slut. And if it's like a man is, you know, sexually promiscuous, it's like they get called, like they get praised and all these things. And I think those stigmas are starting to fall away, because I believe that people are sexual creatures, and some men are more sexual and some women are more sexual. There's no like, oh, women are naturally less. It's just that I think society tells them that they have to hide it, and they feel more shame. At least, you know, over the past years, there's been more shame to just be open about it. And I think that's starting to change, which is really nice. But as myself, who someone was much more held back and more uncomfortable sexually, it got me into some situations over the years that just didn't really feel good. And one example, and I may have shared this a couple of years ago, but one really big example was I had been celibate for a long time. And I decided when I got into New York City and I found Buddhism, I decided to stop pursuing women and to kind of cut out sex in my life for a couple. It was about 2 to 3 years. I don't remember the exact amount of time, but I was very clear, like, I don't want to pursue this anymore because I was spending a lot of time thinking about women, thinking about dating, thinking about, you know, playing these games and sex and all this stuff. And I wanted to see what my life would be like if I just took that out, because it was taking away so much energy. And I remember a friend saying, he's like, how can you be celibate? Like, all I do every day is think about sleeping with women. He's like, that's it. He's like, you know, I'm just texting them, I'm meeting them, I'm just trying to find ways to like sleep with women. He's like, what are you doing all day? And I'm not saying this is all men, but I think the reality is a lot of men, you know, think about sex a lot. I think he was exaggerating. I don't think he was talking about all the time, but like, I think that's a big pursuit for a lot of men. It's this idea of like, how can I sleep with women? And He's like, what do you think about all day? And I was like, everything else. You know, there's so much when my mind wasn't just trying to like get in relationships, be in relationships, be with women intimately and all these things. I just had space for so much more. And I wasn't caught in this emotional loop of always trying to like guess, okay, I hung out with this girl, had a great time. Then we're sending texts. Does she like me? Does she not? Playing games. You know, she's distant. She's, you know, she's all over. All these things. Like, I just took that away for a while. And so I spent a few years being celibate, and it was really amazing experience. And I found a way to really like control my sexual urges. Instead of just like, okay, I'm horny, gotta go do this, you know, gotta do that. It's like I found a way to really control those urges in a beautiful way that I could like, it didn't own me, you know. And that's what I saw. Like, there was a lot of conditioning where sex was owning me when I was younger in a weird way. Like, this is important. I need to, if I'm gonna be with a girl, we need to sleep together. We need to like have this climax and this experience. And so that really helped. What happened was I met this girl, and we started spending some time together, and she knew that I didn't want to sleep with her. She knew that I was not interested in that I had, you know, kind of been celibate for a long time, and I was just now slowly starting to get back into being sexual at all, into kissing people, into like getting into that world at all. But, you know, things, we started making out, and one thing led to a next, and we ended up sleeping together, and I knew that she wanted to. She was instigating the whole thing. I knew that I had told her that I was not interested in that, and she was instigating it. But I was too shameful, too embarrassed to actually say that I didn't want to sleep with her. And we ended up sleeping together, and I did not enjoy it. I did not feel good about myself during. I did not feel good about it after. But I did it because I didn't want to upset her. And I realize that this is in some ways can feel rare, but I think it's more common than we realize, where people do things out of just they don't want to upset the person. You know, that's that people pleaser inside of me. And I think the truth is that this tends to be a case for women a lot more than men, where women go through with things because they're afraid to say no. And I was afraid to say no. And I felt like even more so because I'm a man, if I say no, how demasculating is that in that moment? So I just let it happen. And I did not feel good about it. And to me, sex is a very special, sacred thing now that I've like really come to understand is this beautiful, magical energy exchange. And not something you do when you're wasted and drunk and, you know, oh, whatever. It's like this very beautiful, special thing. And none of that existed there. And I felt really gross for a while. But I didn't want to even tell people about it because I'm a man. It's like, cool, you know, we sleep with someone, like, cool, like a man, we had sex, you know, she's beautiful, all these things. And I just didn't feel that. And it took me a while to really get back, after that experience, it took me a while to really get back to a place where I felt comfortable sexually. And I did get thinking more and more about women and how much more challenging that is. Cause I, you know, physically, you know, I'm a strong, well-equipped man. So if I could have said no, it would have been much easier for me, but some people are put in places where they can't say no, or they don't feel like they can say no. Or when they say no, there's still a yes. And it's very scary. And so this got me thinking more and more about what that really means and what I can do about that. So number one, I felt like doing a podcast was important because I can educate people on, you know, listen, no matter who you are, where you are right now, if you're going in the right direction, if you're trying to become a better person, if you're looking into yourself, if you're creating awareness around your actions so that you can grow and change, that's a good start. You can't go back and change the past, but you can look at the past and say, okay, what are the things that I do not like? You know, what are the things that I've done that I just really genuinely do not like? And by doing those things, you can start to say, okay, how can I change that? How can I start the conversation? How can I be more honest? How can I connect to, you know, my female friends or bring more female energy into my life? Or how can I bring up these conversations that are hard? Or if I see something happening and someone's being aggressive, how can I stand up and say something? But not from a sense of like, you know, you have to fight for someone, but like actually, you know, bringing awareness to someone else that might not be aware. Because I think most people are, deep down, they want to be good, but they don't know how to be because it's cool to be bad, you know, or their friends support those bad behaviors and they're worried that if they change, they're going to be outcast by their friends, and their friends are the only people that they know. And I'm not here doing this to create excuses for people. I just think it's important to really understand and step into other people's world. Because when you step into somebody else's world, you can get a sense of why they are the way they are. And when you see why someone is the way that they are, you start to understand that, you know, everyone has the potential for change. You know, and usually everything is at the sense of fear. There's this level of fear. It's like this baseline of fear where people say, you know what? I could do that, but I'm too scared. Because if I do, all these other things are going to happen. We have this assumption that things are going to happen if we stand up for what's right, if we make changes in our life. We have all these fears, but so much more good comes out of being honest and being truthful and being vulnerable. And the more awareness you create in your life, the more you can actually make changes, the more you can step up and do things differently. Sure, would I love to go back in the past and wish I could tell myself now, like, hey, dude, it's not worth it. These people that you're trying to impress or get be liked by, they're not worth it. I wish I could do that, but I can't. So I don't waste time doing that. All I say is, in this moment now, I can become a better person. In this moment now, I can make gigantic changes. In this moment now, I can learn about myself and create the awareness so that I can grow and blossom into the person that I want to be. So if you're living in this world of fear and you're unsure of Me Too and what it means, like, listen, the past can come back to bite you. But if it does, there's a reason. You know, if you really did something really, really, really bad, you know, and if you weren't honest and you really cheated people out of something, you know, the past might come back and get you, but you still have a way to redemption. And, you know, a lot of people talk about how there isn't really a path to redemption for people in the media, like all these big stars that are being called out for Me Too and their careers are being ruined. But there is always a path to redemption. It might not be in entertainment anymore, you know, could maybe someone's dream was to be a movie star and then that got ruined. And they're like, well, that's my career's over. I can't do anything. But there's a path to redemption in your soul, no matter who you are. You can, if you've done something wrong to someone and you know it for sure and it's burning in your heart, you can reach out to that person and apologize and be honest. You can say, you know what? I feel really bad about what I did and I just want to apologize. And I didn't, you know, at the time have the awareness to be a decent human. And it's been eating me up for a long time. And what I did to you made you uncomfortable and unsafe. And I feel really bad, and I just wanted to let you know that I'm truly sorry. You know, you can go and you can apologize to someone if that is something burning in your heart. Don't be afraid that it's gonna make things worse, because sometimes that's all people need to hear, you know. And the next part that I wanted to bring up in this podcast is it's not just about Me Too. I think the Me Too movement sparked a lot of things, but when I really look at it, it's about bad behavior and dishonesty. And so there's so many different movements going on. Like, there was just this gigantic college scandal where all these people were indicted, all these like celebrities and different people were arrested for, if you haven't heard about it, they basically were paying this guy who was like kind of the ringleader of this whole thing to get their kids into college by faking things, by like faking their SAT scores, I think. And one thing I know that he was faking, like some people who weren't even athletes, he would take pictures with their kids and make it seem like they were on the crew team to help them get into certain schools. And they were paying lots of money, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars to get their kids into schools that maybe they couldn't have got into otherwise. And, you know, it all came crashing down and karma came back to bite them. And a lot of people were arrested and got fined insane amounts of money and may go to jail. And that was one example. And then there's another example that was through someone that I actually know, someone I've done some collaborations with over the past couple years on our channel. And she's a YouTube vlogger, lifestyle person. And without getting too into details, and her name is Ralvana, and she basically was kind of spotted eating fish. And she's been touting this vegan and raw lifestyle for many, for like 6 years. And she does content around it, and she does cleanses. And she finally came out with a video saying that she did recently start eating fish and eggs because she's been having all these health issues over the years, and she believes she could cure it through plant-based. And her doctor kept saying, you know, you need to add this and that, and she just didn't really listen. And you can watch her video, Ralvana, if you want to check that out. But it got a ton of press and so much hate and completely, like, destroyed. I don't want to say destroyed, I don't know, but, like, really put a bad view and eye on her channel. So a lot of people were just throwing like hate, and they're upset, and they're fighting back, and all these things. And when I started really investigating into it, the biggest thing that I saw was that, you know, her and other people in the media, that like when you're committing a life to potentially being famous, when you're committing a life to potentially doing something great and grand and being in the public eye, there's the opportunity, especially with the internet, that people are going to spot you doing something. And there's such a spotlight on bad behavior right now, which I think is a good thing, because it's easy to get away with stuff until you get caught, right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's easy to make a bad decision when your brand's getting big, when you're getting more and more eyes on yourself, and all of a sudden, you know, you realize that something's not right. And I see this all the time. Actually, years ago, I heard this podcast. This guy was talking about how there's a lot of people in the raw diet movement who they've been raw for years. They, you know, write a book on raw. They have, you know, a channel and followers and all this stuff. And they're talking about how great raw is. And then all of a sudden, they start having health issues. And they don't know what to do, because if they tell their fans, they're worried about their career is going to go down. They're going to have backlash because they've been touting this, you know, belief in this thing for many, many, many years. So they end up secretly not being raw anymore. And maybe they hope one day to get back to being raw or whatever it is. But then they have to hide it. And it creates this really weird space because people don't know how to be honest. And one of the reasons I want to talk about this is, like, I think it is so important to create honesty. And I think as a creator, it can be challenging. There are things that are going on behind the scenes sometimes that we want to be able to talk about, but maybe even some cases legally we can't talk about. Even myself, I have something that's happy and excited. It's not at all a bad thing that would cause any issues and problems, but I have a big change that's coming out, but I can't legally talk about it for the next month or two. It's just a kind of a career shift that's going to be going on in my life. And I'm excited to share it with you, but until it actually goes through, I can't express it, you know? So there are things sometimes that are going on behind the scenes that people don't understand. But then there's also the flip side of people think that in order to build a brand, they have to have this solid thing. This is my brand. This is my mission. This is how it's going to go. But the truth is, life is always growing and life is always changing. You know, if you build a brand off of, like, this is the way, there's going to be a chance, and most likely at some point, it's not going to be the way anymore. And if you're so stuck on that, things are going to kind of fly back in your face. One thing we talked about last night was that, like, there's this gigantic shift in the other direction. You know, there's this big pendulum shift to, like, you know, female empowerment and feminism right now. And I think it freaks a lot of people out. It freaks a lot of men out because they're like, oh, it's too intense. People are getting too much punishment and all this stuff. And it's like, no. That's not the case. Drastic things need to happen for shifts. If someone got a slap on the wrist, people just go back, oh, I'll take my chances. But when drastic things happen, drastic shifts happen. And ultimately, things can go back to balance and equilibrium, but it will be new balance, you know, a new balance. There you go. That's a new balance. Sounds like a commercial for New Balance. But things will turn into their own new balance. And it's going to be something different. It's going to be something important. So one of the reasons I really wanted to bring all this stuff up about, like, the media and what's going on and all this dishonesty is that I think you need to be honest. And the sooner you are being honest, and I'm not just talking about if you have a brand, but in your life, in your relationship. I had a huge opportunity with my wife last year where I shared something that I was scared to share for years. And it's funny because there were a couple of big things that I shared with her, that I had never told her. And one thing I made such a big deal out of, and when I told her, she was like, okay, cool, whatever. And the other thing was much more intense, and it caused a huge breakdown, and we really struggled. We had some really dark, hard times that we had to figure out and had to get through, and luckily our marriage and our love is really strong, and we worked through it together. But when I got that off my chest, when I shared those things that I was led to believe I just, you know, shouldn't share. You know, sometimes we have these ideas that, like, oh, we shouldn't share that. Or, yeah, you know, you never tell that to people and you keep that to yourself, whatever. But when I got it off my chest, even though it created this huge breakdown and all these things, ultimately it only strengthened stuff. And I think if there's something that you're afraid to share right now in your life with someone that you care about because you're worried they're not going to like you or they're going to reject you, you need to share it immediately. You need to share why you've been afraid to share it. Because it's going to come out one way or another. And if it doesn't come out physically, it's going to come out in a emotional manifestation. Actually, what I should say is if it's not going to come out of your mouth, it's going to come out in another way. When people bottle things down, you know, we end up getting health issues. There's so much tied to what we feel internally with how we feel physically. And I even think about a lot of these people that do hide things, like people that maybe hide, hey, this is the diet, and now I'm secretly not doing it, but I can't tell you, I can't tell people that because they're going to worry about my brand. I think they end up probably having more health issues because they're lying, they're hiding things back. If you're not sharing your truth, you know, your body, your whole being is going to, like, find ways to break down. So what I want to leave you with is if there's something that you just feel like a burning desire that you wish you could share with someone, and you know could maybe stir things up, that, you know, maybe they're going to be upset with you or whatever, I encourage you to find a way to share it from love. And I'm not here to tell you how it's going to go. I don't know how it might go for you. There's an opportunity that it could be tough and rough, but I do know that the truth will set you free. And the sooner you are at being honest with yourself, the sooner trust comes in, love comes in, connection comes in. If you're someone that has a brand and you're worried about it ruining your audience and all these things, it's like it's only a matter of time till things are going to come out. So just be honest and be truthful with where you're at. And trust that the people that care, the people that are going to stick around, are the ones that really matter in your life, whether it's friends or family or fans or audience or all those things. I am just having my experience. I'm not pretending that I'm right. I'm not pretending that I'm good, that this is the only way to live. I'm learning. I'm growing. Everything could change for me tomorrow. And I don't want to pretend like I've got it all figured out. I said this in the last podcast. I'm not here to pretend like I have it all figured out. Because if I did, I'd just be lying to myself. And I'm not here to build some brand that, you know, is packaged up and tied with a neat little bow. That doesn't interest me. I'm here to share things with you that might open you up to something new, to something different. So that your life, you can experience more growth, you can experience more joy, you experience more love and connection. It's been lovely speaking. See you soon.